On a lost island, someone is trying to make a transmitter work.
Reception is good.
Il faut nous aider.
Wait, what's that?
It's Russo's signal.
Oh, crap.
But this radio has a wider bandwidth.
Owen! Stop, do you hear that?
That was the oath. Just said. Duke Ellington.
Whoa. You hear how clear that is? It's gotta be close, right?
Radio waves at this frequency bounce off the ionosphere. They can travel thousands of miles. It could be coming from anywhere.
There any time. Just kidding, dude.
The noise before the music, the noise and the mystery, the noise from any place or any time, the noise and its history. Hi everyone, this is Aniello De Santi and you were listening a scene from Lost, the TV show, maybe the most compelling drama on TV right now. And today at Super Memo we're going to have a top-notch drama too with an exclusive interview that will take us into the history of noise. And so please welcome the one who will lead us within this story, is Professor Leon Cohen, from City University of New York. Hi, Professor.
Hi.
So, how are you finding Italy?
I am great. Italy is great, as always, and everything about it is great.
So, Professor Cohen is here in Torino for a lecture magistralis about the fascinating history of noise, a history filled with characters you can't resist and cliffhanger you don't expect, something that is totally worth telling. So, let's make clear the picture. This is a story about noise and not about noisy stuff. So, what's the difference? What's noise? And why is it so important in science and in life?
Well, noise in the average conversation, usually something that you don't want, like static or people talking too much or traffic and stuff like that. But in science, and of course that is noise, but in science, noise is a very well-developed field and it affects every field of science, astronomy, chemistry, physics, especially engineering. Biology now is very big on noise. And the average person doesn't understand why noise is important. And also, many people hear that Einstein invented noise. And they get very confused by that. Why would the great Einstein, one of the smartest guys that ever lived, waste his time with noise? But there's a very good reason, because he understood the importance of noise as we understand in science.
And so let's start with the story, let's start with the drama, because everything starts with, like in every story, with like a shocking discovery. We have an all-time favorite character, Albert Einstein, who discovered noise. So what's its role in noise history?
Better than the word discover noise, he invented noise. He invented the mathematics of noise. And here's why. For 100 years before Einstein, there was a gigantic debate as to whether atoms exist. Most scientists did not believe in atoms. They weren't needed. The Industrial Revolution, all of science evolved in the 1800s without the need of the atom. But starting about 1800, people started to explain certain things with these little things called atoms. And as you may or may not know, one of the leading figures who understood things very clearly actually came from Torino, namely Avogadro. And Avogadro published this very famous paper in 1811, and it was published in France, because at that time you were owned by France, so to speak, you know?
Yes, we were.
And unfortunately, Avogadro was not taken seriously, but he was one of the first, him and Dalton, that came up with the idea. that you can explain a lot with this notion that matter consists of little balls that we now call atoms. But 99% of the scientists didn't believe in atoms. But a few scientists, the famous ones being Dalton, Avogadro, Clausius, Boltzmann, started to push for the idea of atoms, started to say, look, these things are real and they exist, and so forth.
And Einstein was the one who invented, like you said. You said in your paper, in your conference, that it is important how Einstein begin his paper, his work on atoms. The very first paragraph make us understand why atoms are so important.
It wasn't that why atoms are so important. Everybody was having big time fights. Do they exist or don't they exist? The people who said they don't exist, they said, look, you are crazy. This matter, the table can't be little balls. That's like crazy. You know? But some of people like Boltzmann and Maxwell and few people really thought they do exist. And they had some evidence for it, but nobody could find a manifestation of atoms. Nobody could see atoms. Nobody could say, well, where are they? What effects are there? Remember, the Industrial Revolution never needed atoms. Engines were built, factories were built, no mention of atoms. But Einstein knew that he would make his mark in history if he found a way to see the effects of atoms, if he found a way to see the manifestation of atoms, if he found something that will make it obvious that atoms exist. And that paper they did in 1905 is considered one of the three miracles. The Einstein year of 1905 is considered the miracle year.
Yeah.
Because he published five papers, one of them is nobody cares about, and he published four papers, but in these four papers he had three miracles. So it took him four papers for three miracles. So, you know, he wasn't
quite
so smart.
Media.
If he was really smart, he would have published three papers, three miracles. Okay.
And let's talk about Einstein, because maybe you don't know, Einstein is the nickname of a girl that is the character of a song by Bette Midler in 1972. And this girl was called the Einstein of the dance, but even Big Noise. So we thought it was impressive to have this song here today, and later we will talk about Noise later.
Ignores from an echo against her, no one stood a
And that was Bette Midler, Big Noise from Gwyneth Campbell. Let's go back to Einstein and how he showed the Avogadro number, how he mostrated it to everyone.
Well, first I'm shocked that Bette Midler, that I didn't know she knew so much about Einstein and noise. I actually have seen once, even I spoke to her in the street in New York. But now I have much higher respect, not only for her singing, but for her scientific knowledge. But anyway, what Einstein realized is that Avogadro's number is gigantic. He didn't know, nobody knew exactly what it was. As a matter of fact, Einstein is the person that suggested how to measure Avogadro's number. But everybody knew that it was going to be very, very big. So therefore, the atoms in a room say, oh, there's an incredible number. And they are going all over the place. They are hitting each other, doing everything under the sun. So that's it. But Einstein realized that if these atoms hit something very small, that we now call a Brownian particle, like a piece of dust or pollen, then by accident, a piece of pollen or a piece of dust will be hit more from one side than the other. So he said, okay, look, if we have atoms, and if there's so many, and they are hitting a big piece of something, of dust, once in a while, they will hit it harder from one side to the other. And we will be able to see that under a microscope. So he calculated what the statistics are for this big particle that we now call a Brownian motion particle. And he calculated how the length of this piece of pollen depends on Avogadro's number and how it depends on the temperature. And then he said, okay, look, if we measure how this piece of pollen moves around, we can reverse the argument and measure Avogadro's number. And that's how he ends this famous little article that only was like 4 or 5 pages. He said, okay, now I'm suggesting that we can measure Avogadro's number by the fluctuations, by the noise. And he ends his paper saying he hopes that somebody will actually do that. Now, Einstein was smart, but he was also ambitious. He knew that he had done something amazing. So he developed the mathematics, this little equation, which is very trivial. And then a year or two later, Perrin started to measure, and that's how Avogadro's number was measured. And Avogadro's number was never called Avogadro's number till after Einstein and Perrin. So Einstein suggested how to measure Avogadro's number using noise. Perrin actually measured, and that was the end of the debate. Everybody accepted atoms. Einstein was famous. Perrin got the Nobel Prize for measuring Avogadro's number. The only person who was not happy was Avogadro, because he died a long time ago, and he died without recognition, because he really understood everything about how atoms react and so forth, but nobody had accepted it. So we owe Einstein and Perrin for reviving Avogadro.
And you said that everyone was ready to accept atoms.
Almost immediately,
but in the first time it wasn't so. In France, at the beginning of the century, it was forbidden to teach atoms at school, and teacher put the atoms at the appendix of the book.
Well, what happened, there was still, this was in 1905, and, you know, 95% of the scientists did not believe atoms. But once Einstein came, most started to believe atoms. However, there were the old-time professors who said, this is crazy, it's crazy, atoms are crazy, and that was the thing. And these people gained control of the educational systems, and especially in France. Now, Perrin was French, okay? Poincaré, also who started to believe in atoms, said, okay, atoms exist, he was French. But the old-time professors and chemists refused to accept atoms, and they were in control of the educational system, and they insisted that books do not mention atoms, okay? But it was getting crazy. By 1920, 1925, every parent got the Nobel Prize, every Avogadro became famous, Einstein was super famous, but these people still said, no, we will not teach atoms, you know? So what authors started to do is they started to mention atoms at the end of the book in an appendix. So as Pullman, who was a historian and a chemist, said, it was better to read the books from the back so that you learn about atoms in the beginning rather than read them from the front.
Yeah. And someone said that this forbidden, this anti-atomist France, it was the cause of late, France was late in industrial and chemists for at the beginning of the century, because noise it's, and atoms are important even in industrial engineering, electrical engineering, and in the economics too.
Well, now everything, fluctuations or noise, as I said, affects every field. So, for example, in economics, and by the way, this famous French guy, Benoît Bachelier, sort of invented it before Einstein, but not to prove atoms. He was studying the stock market. So if you think the prices of stocks, they go up and down, that's what economists call the noise, okay? In chemistry, it's the same thing. Things are fluctuating. Because in engineering, of course, it's super important because noise happens in devices like transistors,
like radio.
Wires, radio, and sometimes you want to eliminate it, but sometimes you want to use it. So it's both good and bad, and engineers are the ones that develop much more to do with noise.
Yeah. And I know that you study noise in astronomy, too. There's a big field of noise studies about astronomy, stars, and Big Bang Theory, too.
Well, there's an interesting story. First of all, noise is super important in astronomy. So, for example, when you look at a star and it twinkles, you know, the light is not steady. That's because it's going through the atmosphere and the atmosphere is changing. And as it's changing, the speed of light, the light that's going through, the atmosphere changes slightly and the star looks like it's twinkling. So fluctuations in astronomy was always very, very important. And astronomers and engineers developed the theory in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. And now, of course, it is super important because of quantum mechanics. And the study of noise in quantum mechanics is a main topic because many devices like the laser, the ordinary laser you see in supermarkets and so forth, this is called a noise device. It depends on understanding of noise. That's how it works.
But we have even noise music. It's music that often is something linked to experiment and unconventional melody. And with this we have Kate Nash, she's a Brit artist, and this is Little Red.
And a knock, 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 scratch. And a knock, 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 scratch. And a knock, 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 scratch. It's a jump, 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 jump,
Kate Nash. And we go back talking about astronomy and noise, because I wanted to ask you if you can explain us how, by accident, with noise, we can explain the origin of the universe, the expansion of the universe.
Well, what happened totally by accident is in 1947-48, when communication via shortwave became very important, the telephone and so forth, all based, of course, on Marconi of 70 years earlier, not 70, but 50 years earlier, people wanted to discover where the noise is coming from. So Bell Laboratories built this antenna to try to discover where all the noise is coming from in the atmosphere. So they built this very expensive antenna and so forth, and these guys would then point the antenna in different places and see if there's a storm. Storms cause noise, for example. So, but after about a year or so, they found all the sources of noise, but then there was this one source that they could not understand what it was, because no matter where they pointed the antenna, they found this noise. They couldn't figure it out, you know, because they thought that they found all the sources. Of course, they thought maybe it was the instrument and so forth, but they made sure the instrument was working right and stuff like that. So then what they did is they went to a famous physicist at the time, Dickey, who was at Princeton, who was also working on a certain problem in cosmology, and they said to him, hey, by the way, you know, we built this antenna, we point it everywhere in the sky, and there's always this crazy noise. And he realized that this noise is the noise of the original expansion of the universe. So when the universe started about 15 billion years ago, it was incredibly hot, 15 billion degrees or whatever, you know? And then when it expanded, it cooled, but it was still radiating. And now, of course, it's a very well-accepted thing. It's radiating light that we call 3-degree black body radiation, because it cooled a lot, so it's the equivalent of 3 degrees. And that was the proof that the universe actually had a beginning and expanded. And it was due to an accident that Bell Laboratories was searching for noise.
So it all started with a noise, with the Big Bang, the
right.
Noise. While in the future, in our future, a lot of study about noise is in the biology field. What's the plan? What's the achievement?
Well, of course, noise is always important in the last 70, 80, 100 years in chemistry, physics, geology, astronomy, and so forth. But in the last 10 years, the study of fluctuation, study of noise, has exploded in finance. So you can actually get a degree now in what's called financial engineering, and you get a job with banks for 200,000 euros per year just by learning noise and fluctuations in finance. But also, in the past 10 years, it has been realized how important noise is in biology. And the reason is very simple. There are many reasons, but one of the reasons is, you see, if you have a process that cannot happen, so if you say, well, if it cannot happen, why can it not happen? Because something has to overcome, what we call a barrier has to overcome. Well, if the barrier cannot be overcome, then the process can't happen. However, if there's noise, then once in a while, by accident, it will happen. So noise can make reactions, processes in biology that you would normally not think are possible. So this is sort of by accident, you get a fluctuation, a change, and it has been found that nature has made many systems based on that idea. And nature, by evolution, is taking advantage of that. So noise has become super important. The study was super important in biology because it can do processes which we thought could not happen.
And I'd like to thank you, Professor, because you make us understand the magnificence of noise, this really fascinating history, but above all, the future of noise study. And I'd like to remember you that everything you heard today, you can see the podcast on our website, on dequadre.polito.it, and you can find the Italian translation of this interview as well. So thank you so much for coming here. Hope to see you soon, Professor.
Well, thank you very much, and it was a pleasure talking to you, and it was a pleasure to be in Torino, and it was a pleasure to be in the city of Avogadro. Some of you should know Avogadro comes from Torino, and he did his famous article in 1811. So I hope that Italy will have a super commemoration
super party in 2011. Let's hope so.
And I'll be back.
And we were going to interview you again.
Absolutely.
Super Memo will come back next week. So see you soon. Thanks to Lorenzo Galleani, professor that organized the conference today at Politecnico. And thanks to Federico Derde, our technician. Bye everyone. Bye Aniello.